Hi, everyone. I'm Jenna Millie with Screenwriting You, and I'm here today with Jay Dyer, who is the showrunner and writer of a Netflix original sitcom called Club de Cuervos. Jay, how are you doing?
Very good. How are you, Jenna?
Good. I'm so happy to talk to you. I loved... I love the episodes I saw of Club de Cuervos. It's really funny. It's such a great tone. So you know nothing about soccer or Spanish, and you ended up writing a show about soccer and Spanish. How did that happen?
That's a very good question. I actually, when my agent first approached me, I had the same reaction. Why do they want to meet with me? They've read my stuff. I'm not really a sports guy, and it's in Spanish. What's going on here? And he explained the situation. Netflix discovered, well, they found out about Gaz Alazraki, who is this wunderkind, amazing Mexican director. He directed this movie called Nosotros Los Nobles, which was the highest grossing Mexican film up to that moment in time, and they wanted to do a show with him. And he said, you know what, I've got this great idea. Me and my buddy Mike Lamb have this idea about a soccer team and the family dynamics, and we wanted to do a show about that. And Netflix said, great. And then Gaz said about finding writers to help bring his vision to life, and he liked my writing. He liked the fact that there was a slightly dark yet warm humanistic tone to it, and he thought it would be perfect for the show, despite my lack of Spanish and lack of soccer knowledge.
Wow, so how does that work when you get started and you are working? You know, it's going to be in a different language. I heard a little bit about how you would write in English and then have it translated, or can you talk about the process?
Well, yes, we did write in English. The process, we assembled the writer's room. There were five of us in the writer's room, including Gaz, myself, Mike Lamb, who's the co-creator with Gaz, plus Russell Ida and Leslie Constantini, and we were our little band of five. And we gathered for the first day, and we just approached it like any other television show. We figured the story is universal. We might not know all of the specifics about Mexican culture, but obviously Gaz was a writer in the room, so he was there to keep us in line. But beyond that, the stories are universal, and so we didn't look upon the language barrier as, frankly, even an issue. We just proceeded to create a TV show.
Well, there's so many clever phrases and really funny, like, cultural references. I noticed in the first episode there's one that says, I think you're a captain. Your mother thinks you're a captain, but you ask a captain, you're no captain. And I thought that – I really laughed at that, sound like a cultural –
That came straight from the mouth of Mike Lamb. His father said that to him once. And he said, you know what? I think Chava's father should say that to him. And that's how it ended up in there.
I loved it. It was so funny.
And apparently the word captain is translatable into Spanish, so there was no problem.
Oh, that's great. So you – because there's so much color to it. It's like – I was just wondering how, you know, what the process was on that.
It's funny because we decided our approach was simply to just write the best scripts that we can and not even think about the language difference. We just wrote a bunch of great characters and great stories, great situations, and we just wrote it as interestingly and entertainingly as possible. And we didn't really worry too much about the Spanish specifically, because we knew that when Gaz did the translations, he knew exactly what our intent was. And so if there was perhaps a phrase that didn't quite match in Spanish that was in English, that he would find the equivalent Spanish phrase. So that was not a problem.
Very cool. It's so awesome that you can do that. That just shows a testament to the story and, you know, how you can have legs in a different culture with different kinds of comedy and different humor. It reminded me of, I don't know if this is a reference for you, but it reminded me of Puccini's comedic opera. Do you know that opera? It's about...
I do not know.
You have to look it up. It's about a patriarch who is found dead in his bed. And so the whole thing takes place around the bedposts of this patriarch who has died.
Oh, really?
And his family comes in and out of the room, and as each family member realizes that he's dead in there, they try to convince the next family member that he's just sick until they can get the will settled. It's really funny. I've always loved it. You never get comedy in an opera, but you might check it out because it's got some of the similar themes of, you know.
You said it was
Yes.
And I will have to see that.
It's a It's I can spell it for you. It's C-S-C-H-I-C-C-H-I is the last name. And I think that's the name of the patriarch. And it's a Puccini opera, but I don't go to opera that much. I'm sounding like I do, but I caught it at UCLA.
I've been too much in my life. Once I fell asleep, I have to admit, but
no, it's not my bag either. But yeah, it's definitely, it was a similar story type. But so how do you, with the children, you know, and the goal of the show, the arc of the first season, how do you structure that? Is there someone that you consider the main character? Is the son sort of this ne'er-do-well son, is he the main character and the other kids are the antagonist, or do you see it like an ensemble? Just curious of the structure that you put together.
Well, funny you should ask that. What's interesting is that when we originally walked into the room, in our brains, Chaba, the son, was very firmly the protagonist. He's played by Luis Gerardo Mendez, who's a big star in Mexico, and just, he has the most charming, delightful, amazing presence on camera. You just can't help but love him, even when he does the most despicable and awful, funny things. And we knew that, especially in Latin America, that he would be the big draw. And so we walked into the room thinking, okay, here is this ne'er-do-well trying to fit into his father's shoes, and it's a little too soon for that because he just isn't prepared for the responsibility. And we initially envisioned the sister, Isabel, as his antagonist, because in their family, she's the smart one. She's the capable one. She is the good girl, in quotes, who always did what she was supposed to do. And she resents the fact that her party boy, playboy brother gets all the attention, gets all the accolades because he has this charming, wonderful personality. But as we started talking about the characters and the world and their conflict, I began to see more and more that, well, wait a second, I think Isabel's the protagonist in this story.
Wow.
And maybe Chava's the antagonist. And the thing about that, though, is what we end up with is, in a way, it's up to you who is the protagonist. Because I feel like both of their stories are equally valid, both of their arcs are equally valid, and so we honored both of them, and so I will say they are co-protagonists and co-antagonists, and they have a very interesting journey over the next 13 episodes.
And when doing that, I always think it's fascinating when you can get to that point, because it really shows how, you know, mono and mono you are on the two characters. How do you...
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, it seems like, but then to me, just as, and for other people out there trying to do something like that, how do you keep your head straight on who's going to win? Do you do that by the episode, or?
What we actually, it's funny because when we started, we actually did not have a pilot. Netflix bought the premise, and Mike had written a Bible that was, I think, maybe 10 pages long. And so when we started back a year ago, back in June of 2014, we just decided to throw all the spaghetti on the wall and just discuss the universe, discuss the characters, not just Chava and Isabel, but everybody. Like, what was this world? So first we built the world, and we also went to Mexico for a nice, fun, very fun tequila-filled research trip.
Awesome.
And we came back with just this amazing sense of who these people are and what their lives were like. And we especially, in terms of Isabel, frankly, learned a lot more about the role of women in Mexican society. And we actually realized that even though we have certain attitudes here, in terms of the role of women, in other words, it's not that shocking, for example, for a woman to run a company here, but it's a little more shocking there. And so Isabel became more sympathetic because of that, because of the barrier she had to fight against. And we decided to, okay, let's just take a step back, look at these 13 hours as 13 chapters in a 13-hour-long movie. And so we broke the show down like a movie.
Awesome.
Act, second act, midpoint, turning points, third act, but spread out over 13 episodes. And so if you watch the show, roughly you'll see that episodes 1 through 3 or 4, oh, that's the first act, and it turns into the second act. Oh, here's definitely the midpoint, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And that's one reason why I love this project so much, because we just felt so free and liberated, because we knew we had 13 episodes to tell this story, and we just wanted to approach it the best way we could, and we figured, hey, you know, let's do our novel for television.
That's awesome. Are you set up for a season two, or do you just kind of go for it on season one, hoping there's a season two, but then if you get a season two pickup, you're going to be back to the drawing board?
Well, we will not be back to the drawing board. It's funny, because we constructed season one as a complete story, but we know where their journey is going to end after season five. I mean, I don't want to reveal too much. In fact, I don't want to reveal anything. But given their relationship, we know exactly where it's going to ultimately end up. But each season, there will be a complete story that will hopefully feed into the other chapters that will follow.
Is that something?
Other seasons that will follow.
Do you recommend that? And also, speaking from your time on Californication, do you recommend, you know, for someone out there who wants to, you know, construct a show, that they do a five season, you know, or several season ending? Or just, can you explain a little bit more about why that's useful to, you know, the writing process, to have that end in mind?
Well, sure. Well, I'll say there is a difference between broadcast and cable. I think in broadcast, it's an entirely different model, because you've got 22 episodes and you have no idea how long the show is going to run. And plus, you're frankly writing the show as you're producing the show. And so you have the ability to sort of course correct. And if something's working, you throw it out and then you add other characters, new characters. There's ample room to play around with what you've thought about in a broadcast show. But in cable, if you know you have 13 or 10 or 8 episodes, whatever the number is, I think it is important to know what your end game is. It doesn't have to be necessarily specific and exact, but I believe if you're creating a world and you're creating a lead character or characters, you hopefully clearly want to tell a story about these people, and hopefully you know where their journey is going to end. I know famously that Vince Gilligan pitched Breaking Bad as Mr. Chips becomes Scarface. Now, I'm sure he didn't know every single permutation that would happen in Walter White's life, but he knew in general where it was going to end. And I think that is one reason why the show was so great, because there was a very clear trajectory. Each season, you could see the story getting progressively darker, and it wasn't by accident.
Yeah, that's great. It seems like you have to have that. If you don't have that sorted out in the beginning, your pitch isn't going to be as solid.
Well, I think so. I mean, I feel that your job as a writer is to know your characters better than they know themselves, frankly. And in a way, you're sort of a godlike figure a puppet master, frankly. I mean, you are one of the fates in Greek mythology, and you are pulling the strings, and you have to know where their life is going to, well, their journey is going to end.
And how do you,
at least for me.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. How do you get there? How do you get to know your characters? Like, say you get, you know, the spark of an idea. Do you brainstorm that out? Do you do like free writing? How do you get to understand the character so that you know them that well? Or do you think it just, you have to have the idea that goes behind it?
Well, it depends on the project. Features are different, because if you're writing by yourself, if I'm writing a feature script by myself, I will have a spark for a character, then I'll sit down and just start free writing, and they'll start telling me who they are and what they're all about. Again, scenes that never end up in the final script, but I just need to sort of hear them talk, and they start to tell me. That sounds crazy, I know. But they start to,
no, no.
They start to tell me who they are. But when you're on a TV show, what's great is you've got this great team of writers. And so you just deep dive and freestyle and toss out ideas. People have funny pitches. Some are just completely absurd, and you laugh. But you're like, well, wait a second, that's kind of interesting. And you just sort of throw all this stuff on the wall, and then the picture becomes a bit clearer, and then you begin to edit. And one thing we did, it was interesting, because we knew before we started that Luis was cast as Chava. We'd seen his work, we knew him as a person, we knew exactly what he was going, at least we knew enough of what he was going to bring to the role to have a really clear sense of who Chava was going to be. We knew what he could do, we knew what he was going to be. But for the other characters, when you're obviously just, you know, working in a vacuum, it sometimes helps, and helped us, to look for pictures in magazines, sometimes actors, sometimes just some random douchey-looking guy on the internet, and you just print the picture up, put it on the wall, and say, okay, this is Gio, who is one of Chava's ridiculous buddies. And just sort of seeing this guy helps you develop the character. And we saw our walls were just filled with a bunch of pictures. At one point, Ed O'Neill was up there. He was initially one of our writing models for the character of the general manager.
That's an awesome idea. I'm going to do that.
It helps a lot. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's just sort of like a look. I don't know what you would call that, a look board or... That's such a great idea. I think that that helps. So, you know, any little tidbit that a writer can get is helpful to move to the next level because it's just so tough. So I have one.
I know it's very tough.
One last question for you. What was your favorite scene or your favorite moment in the show that you can tell me to just have audio, everybody looking to have everybody looking forward to? What was a moment you liked?
Well, there are so many. I can't say what it is, but Episode 9 mm-hmm. has my two favorite scenes of all time, and they are back-to-back.
Oh, okay. So Episode 9, everybody needs to look forward.
Say that.
Great. Well, so good talking to you, Jay. Thanks so much. And I'm super excited about seeing the rest of the show because I was given two episodes, and then now I got to wait for it. So thank you.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Bye.
Bye.